Welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway, joined by my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here fresh off of a walk from Paul Brown Stadium over to our studio in the Cincinnati Inquirer to break down the Bengals' final preseason game. An exciting loss? Can we even say that? I mean,
that was the best preseason game I have ever been to.
And he's really not kidding. I mean, if you saw the end of that game, I think I rewrote the lead of my game story a couple of times. The Bengals falling in the final seconds to the Dolphins, 29-26. But as we all know, preseason scores, they don't really matter. But this game was important for a number of reasons. So let's just start with the fact that this was the first time Joe Burrow has taken the field at Paul Brown Stadium dressed in his uniform since early November of last year. And in case you missed it, it's everywhere on social media, but I would check it out if you're a Bengals fan, you like Joe Burrow, because the standing ovation that the Bengals fans in attendance at the game today gave Joe as he walked out to the coin toss, I mean, it even gave me chills up in the press box when you just think about all that he went through. Charlie, what was your initial reaction?
Zach Taylor said that it went about as poorly as it could have for the offense, but the first drive went honestly, well, everything you could have wanted to see from Joe Burrow. It went poorly because there was a penalty on the offensive line. Ja'Marr Chase had arguably his worst drop of the preseason, and the offense didn't get a first down, but Joe Burrow and the first team unit still accomplished everything they wanted to see. They got used to Burrow's and got a chance to practice Burrow's cadence in the huddle. Burrow got to feel the rush of running out to the huddle and calling a play, feeling the defense at the snap. I think I saw an audible somewhere mixed in there. Obviously, it wasn't a very aggressive audible, but everything Joe Burrow could have accomplished realistically based on the game plan, he did accomplish.
Well, and the biggest thing he said he would be able to get out of this game is just simply the fact that he was able to get back out there with his teammates. And I think when you look at, you know, all he's had to go through in the rehab process, also being able to take the field with Trey Hopkins as a game captain who went through a similar type of injury that he did. Those two guys being able to get out there together and know that, you know, what they've had to go through is in the past. And as Joe Burrow said following the game, there's really no time for him to look back and give himself a little pat on the back, like, oh, I've made it and I've been able to recover for this injury. He's so laser focused on moving forward. I thought that was really interesting to hear from him following the game, didn't you?
Yeah, and Joe Burrow is exactly, honestly, where you could have said a best case scenario could be for Joe Burrow at the time of the injury. The way he has recovered, the way he has blown through his timeline and the different landmarks and checkpoints that you have to get to returning to a game in the first place. Everyone from Joe Burrow's teammates to Joe Burrow's coaches to training staffs to independent doctors to quarterbacks who have gone through the same thing. Nobody really knows how Joe Burrow was able to get here so quickly. Today was honestly a full circle moment and a culmination of that.
Yeah, definitely. So let's break down those first three snaps from Joe Burrow and the first team offense. Because as we said, it didn't really go well, but there's definitely some notable things that happened on this drive. So let's talk about the first play of the game, Joe Burrow on the handoff on the jet sweep to Tyler Boyd. Zach Taylor said they knew exactly the three type of plays that they were going to run. But what we saw was, although Zach Taylor hasn't quite said who's going to be the starting guards, you can pretty much gather based off of who was out there protecting Joe today. It was Xavier Suofilo at guard, as well as Quentin Spain, and then Riley Reiff outside, along with Jonah Williams, and of course, Trey Hopkins in the middle. Small sample size, but interesting to see the way that group of five is kind of shaken out, right, Charlie?
It's more interesting to see how quickly it came together. It turned out that Deontay Smith and Michael Jordan kind of never even got a chance in the last few weeks of the preseason to become the first team guards. Now, we'll see. Time will tell whether that's the right decision or the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. But Zach Taylor said he felt so much comfort with the consistency of the vets. And it was kind of cliche, but you kind of can see where he's coming from, considering how much inconsistency they had on the offensive line last season. Ever since the second preseason game, you could tell where they felt most comfortable. They really didn't deviate that plan at all from their start of their game planning heading into the Washington week. It sounds like Suofilo and Spain have been their guys for a bit now. Now it's a much different story going forward on say whether Jackson Carmen will be active or not on game days. And now, obviously, one of the big talking points of the game, whether or not Michael Jordan will be on the 53-man roster.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the most interesting positions I'm looking at come Tuesday when the Bengals have to cut their roster down to 53. So we talked about the offensive line, that first snap of the game. And then let's go to the second one, which I kind of, like, I feel like we're doing this every week, but I mean, we have to talk about it, right? Because it continues to be a trend. The bubble screen to Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase, it hits him in the face. He drops the ball again. A post-game, Joe Burrow saying, you know, he didn't even really talk to Jamar about it on the sideline, but he's now dropped four consecutive passes in a game setting. And I think this one was a little bit more concerning to me because in the game against Washington football team, Joe Burrow wasn't throwing him the ball. So you're not supposed to use excuses, but you could attribute that to why he wasn't able to catch the ball. Joe Burrow was throwing him the ball and Jamar was coming off of his best week of practice in training camp. So it was very, I guess I was very shocked that in a pass that was literally so easy for him to catch that he wasn't able to come down with it. And you just have to wonder, week one, if the ball goes his way, how do you feel about him being able to do what the Bengals drafted him to do, and that's catch the ball?
So here's my takeaway, and I'm not even going to start with Jamar Chase. I'm going to start with Auden Tate and Mike Thomas and the fact that the Bengals' fourth and fifth receivers were making contested physical catches, getting hit in the middle of the second quarter and staying in the game. That makes me feel that Jamar Chase's starting spot isn't at all whatsoever in jeopardy. So I think that's important context first. But second, the other side of the coin is that all week the Bengals planned for Joe Burrow to throw a bubble screen to Jamar Chase. That was something precisely that they game planned to keep Burrow safe, to get the quick game going, and probably get Jamar Chase going. Mm-hmm. My question now is, how many plays does Jamar Chase get game planned heading into the game against Minnesota compared to how many he would have gotten maybe 2 weeks ago before this was an issue? You know, he still will be a starter and he will still be a part of the offense. I'm very confident in that because of the ways Thomas and Tate were used today. But again, the flip side. Chase clearly isn't the number one receiver right now, but how much of a gap in role will there be between Higgins and Boyd and with Chase?
Yeah, and a note here on T. Higgins, he was not dressed. He was one of the few Bengals starters on the offensive side of the ball that was not able to go today, and Zach Taylor saying he's dealing with a little bit of back tightness, but if this were a regular season game, Higgins would have played through it, so no cause for concern there with Higgins, but yes, he was not in the starting line up with Burrow and the rest of the first team offense today. And then the third snap, Joe Burrow hands the ball off to Joe Mixon. He rushed for 5 yards on the play and the Bengals have to punt the ball. But Zach Taylor saying even if they had gotten a first down, Joe is coming out after three plays. So Joe leaves the game completely healthy, not touched, and that's the biggest win of all.
The only first-team offensive player who had a chance to do anything today was Evan McPherson, who did.
Yeah.
But no, like I said earlier, Joe Burrow got everything he and the coaching staff could have realistically wanted from this game. Mission accomplished, successful outing, and now obviously the attention turns to, you know, the real thing, where it's an offense that, you know, I have high expectations for, that the team needs to have high expectations for the Bengals to have any sort of a respectable or competitive season. You know, now the hard part begins, but Joe Burrow, you know, I've tried to avoid even mentioning the word ACL with him since the start of training camp. So now officially, you know, we can even cross the threshold of him getting into a game.
Yeah, and just the short time I've been able to cover this team, one of the biggest takeaways I've had is just the confidence level Joe Burrow has in the fact that he's just a second-year player. You would never know. He's only been in the NFL, you know, this being his second season, and that's just from just the way he carries himself at practice, the way he takes command of the huddle, and then just the way he speaks about his team and himself. Obviously, he's the starting quarterback, and there's a lot that comes with it, but I don't, even if Burrow didn't play today and kind of get that game reps that he wanted. I think there's you're not going to have to deal with any, you know, frightness that comes from him the first time he takes a hit. I think this guy is made of the right stuff, and his confidence level for a second-year quarterback is certainly impressive. So as I kind of mentioned, let's shift towards the roster cutdowns that are coming this week. That's the biggest story that will come out of the Bengals this week, and that's who were kind of some of the players, Charlie, that you thought really made a case for themselves this preseason. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, so the player, I would make his case, but I think Joe Burrow made his case better than anyone possibly could have.
Is it someone he's very familiar with?
Yeah, it's Thad Moss. Yeah. So heading into the game, there were a few spots up for grabs on the offense, that last flex spot, whether it be a offensive lineman or wide receiver or running back. The other was the third tight end. And it was a position I had very little feel for it was going to go, how much special teams would be a factor. But then Joe Burrow put it perfectly. He said that Moss is the type of receiver who, I said receiver, but that's exactly what I mean. Yeah. He's the type of receiving threat at tight end who has a feel for routes and a feel for game management. And it's spoke a lot of volume how much Kyle Shurmur was just straight feeding him the ball. Moss was the go-to target on the third string offense, and of course, take that with a grain of salt. But Burrow backing that up with what he had felt and what he had seen throughout training camp really spoke a lot of grounds on, you know, the way Burrow respects him as a player, the way Burrow values him in the offense, and the way Burrow sees him playing a role, which honestly, I didn't quite grasp myself until seeing it in the game today and then hearing Burrow describe it after.
Mm-hmm. I would probably go with running back Chris Evans. He's made a number of plays throughout the preseason, but that was one position group that I had a lot of questions about coming into just knowing what I knew about the Bengals and receivers, that running back group. Besides Joe Mixon, what's the depth? Because as everybody knows, you can't get through a full NFL season, especially with 17 games, with just one running back who can kind of carry the load. So who are those second and third players, and do they have what it takes behind Joe Mixon? And I was really impressed with Evan. So I will be interested to see, A, how many running backs the Bengals keep and if Evans is going to make the team. But then – like you said, Michael Jordan on the offensive line, that's a big-time question because he went from being – and I know they tell us to not read too much into the depth chart, but that's what we do as media folks. We analyze and overanalyze the depth chart, right or wrong. He was the first team starting right guard, and now he's on the bubble. And I thought you asked a really good question to Zach following the game, you know, what's kind of contributed to Michael Jordan just falling down the depth chart as he has.
Yeah, I thought he played really well in Tampa Bay, actually. And in that game, one of my takeaways was that Jordan had the best game of any offensive lineman on the team. Clearly, something had changed since then. So now you get into a question of really interesting roster math because, according to Zach Taylor, Jordan hasn't played consistently enough. There's three options. First, you carry 9 offensive linemen, which is one fewer than I projected them to carry all preseason. That's the case because you don't see the value in keeping Jordan as, I guess he would be 4th or 5th string guard. Mm-hmm. You'd value getting, you know, another defensive end on the roster, Noah Spence type, mm-hmm. or a 7th receiver special teams maven like Stanley Morgan on the roster over him. Second option is Jordan does make it, you keep 10. The third option is, though, instead of Jordan getting that last spot, you keep one of Trey Hill or Isaiah Prince. And that's an option I hadn't considered as strongly. Specifically interested if Isaiah Prince has played his way into a role. I think he's had a solid mm-hmm. camp overall for what you could expect from a 4th or 5th tackle. So again, Jordan's playing time today raised significant questions about, one, how many offensive linemen the Bengals are going to keep. And two, if it's not Jordan, whether or not they want more depth at tackle and they're going to keep Isaiah Prince.
Yep. But regardless, you could say that the main takeaway with the Bengals and the offensive line is they're going with the vets. That's what they think gives them the best option come week 1. So that's what they're going for. So let's talk about the defense. A lot of players making plays today. I think one of the biggest questions that all Bengals fans and even Zach Taylor had is after the news that Osai is likely to miss the season with a knee injury, who was going to step up in place of his production? And we know the Bengals getting better in terms of rushing the passer might be outside of securing the protection for Joe Burrow the number one priority for this team as they finished 32 out of 32 in league in sacks last year. And Osai, you know, in that first preseason game, we've talked about it before. I mean, he looked like he was going to come in and make an impact right away. And without him, you were wondering who's going to be that depth player that the Bengals can rely on to come off the edge. And Darius Hodge continues to make an impact and, you know, definitely making a push for a roster spot. And it was really good to see Kareem get in there and get a sack today. And then Cam Sample. So the Bengals were able to get three sacks today from players that are pushing for those depth pass rushing spots. So overall, what'd you think about that?
That was the position heading into this game I was most interested to evaluate, who's that pass rush specialist. And honestly, it's the position that after watching the game ended up being the hardest to evaluate. Khalid Kareem got one series. You know, he did great. He dominated the series, got a quarterback hit and a sack. Mm-hmm. After Zach Taylor kind of alluded that he might have been expected to play more and might have left the game in the with an injury, we got a we'll see. Yeah. And I just don't know what to make of that. And here's why. You know, you can compare Khalid Kareem's one series with the fact that Darius Hodge, who, quick tangent, clearly outplayed Noah Spence, and I think clearly has the edge over Spence should they choose to keep one of them. Hodge had to play the entire game, and Hodge's ability and his speed off the edge did decrease over the course of a game. You know, on that even last touchdown throw that Miami had, Hodge kind of missed on a sack. He was great, though, off the edge early. He was making plays in the run game. He was, you know, when he goes unblocked, he is as dangerous as anyone on the Bengals because of just how fast he is, and that speed has made him, in my eyes, someone who will make the team. He played more snaps today than I think he will if he makes the team in any game this season. So it's hard. How much stock do you put into those snaps where Hodge was still playing in the fourth? Because in the regular season, he's never going to be that gassed. He's never going to be playing that much. So that's why among those three, you know, you have to take Kareem with a grain of salt. I still was really impressed with Hodge. I think it's down to those two, Hodge and Kareem, for that pass rush specialist role. Mm-hmm. It'll probably come down to Kareem's health now as we get more information.
Yeah, and another position I think we should talk about that I would keep your eye on, not only to see who makes it for the Bengals, but on the wire after these cuts are made, because I think a position that the Bengals are really going to have to secure before, and I can't believe we're saying this because, you know, coming in, you told me just how much the Bengals have invested getting their secondary right. But with the injury to Trey Wayne, Zach Taylor not really giving much information in terms of the severity, but history is not on his side in terms of his ability to get through a season without an injury. Obviously, we know what Darius Phillips can do, Jalen Davis, but it would not shock me if the Bengals add another cornerback from another team somewhere, just given how many injuries can happen, you know, at that position. From a cornerback standpoint, has there been anybody that's impressed you that you think might be pushing for a roster spot?
That's an interesting idea. I mentioned the flexibility that cutting Jordan could theoretically offer the Bengals, and maybe you turn to the defense because Trey Waynes, as you said, is hurt. Darius Phillips sat out of practice one day this week. Obviously, he played today, but Phillips has been injury prone in his career. And Eli Apple's coming off an injury as well. The thing, though, once you get to the roster math is, of course, Trey Waynes is going to have to be one of your 53 entering the season. So you have to probably keep a guy on or try to practice squad him. Because again, coming out of final roster cuts on Tuesday, Trey Waynes is going to be one of those 53. Because if they are him, IR him, he's out for the year. So that means that one of the guys you would have to then fill the depth role would be a guy on your practice squad. So that's Antonio Phillips, Winston Rose. There might be one or two more, but those are the ones who have gotten the most consistent playing time on the outside. Jalen Davis is on the inside. Tony Brown's the other one. So I don't think any of those options are strong. You're smart in pointing that out, though. Secondary now is one of the biggest areas of concerns aside from the line on the entire team, because Waynes is hurt. Some of the other guys haven't played much at all this preseason, and outside corner is particularly thin. And on top of that, I thought Darius Phillips struggled today.
Yeah, I can't believe that. After all those moves the team made to secure the secondary, you're you're here saying it's again thin, but that just goes to show just how hard it is in the NFL to kind of you can never have too many corners. That's what I've heard, you know, my entire time covering the NFL, and it really is true in this case, and I know for a lot of other teams. Do you have any questions in terms of the special teams? Is there anybody that you think maybe shined a little bit or didn't do enough?
I think Evan McPherson might have had the best training camp in preseason
you
that I've ever seen.
You just lit up. Charlie
like any
just lit
ever.
Up. I love this.
Like all of the hyperbole to Evan McPherson, who turned a pick that would have been so easy to mock as a disaster into a pick that actually makes sense. Darius Phillips, though, honestly, has been a real surprise with his ability as a returner. I just spoke about how there are significant areas he needs to improve as an outside cornerback, but he really seems to have locked onto that punt returner spot. They trust him. He looks confident catching the ball. He'll definitely be a bigger threat to make an explosive play compared to Trent Taylor or Trenton Irwin. And he, I think, solidifying that role kind of is a surprise of training camp, considering the reluctance to put him in that role before this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we said, roster cuts coming on Tuesday, and that's kind of the story of this week. The NFL decided to go down to 3 preseason games, so there's a long break right now between the final preseason game and the week one game. So basically this week, players won't be back in some aspect of practicing until about Wednesday or Thursday. Monday and Tuesday is when Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin are really going to spend some time crunching and figuring out the rest of their roster. So Charlie and I will be back to give you our breakdowns of the Bengals 53-man roster, and we'll get you set and make sure you have everything you need to know about that, because when we're done with that, that's when we're going to start the fun stuff. We're going to talk about the week one matchups and all the fun things coming. And I think it's important to note before we wrap this up that preseason results do not matter. The coaches do not game plan. There is no people try to hide their schemes. So if you're wondering why the Bengals were not able to win today or against Washington football team, this is your warning to relax. Joe Burrow looks to be healthy, confident. You got to feel good about the offensive line making the additions it did. And the defense, really, from the training camp practices we've seen, Charlie, they really look like they're flying around and getting their hands on the ball. And seeing that production from Kareem and Hodge today makes me feel a lot better about the depth at the pass rush. And that was kind of one of the biggest questions I had.
Kelsey, I don't want to spoil it because we're too soon for this yet. But do you have a number yet for your season prediction? Are you settled in on a number?
No. You can't put me on the spot like that,
I'm not
Charlie.
Asking you to give the number, but do you have a number?
I have a range. Yeah.
I have
what
a very
you?
Small range. Now okay. Let's go back and forth.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. We'll be giving out our predictions and all of the fun stuff. So as we mentioned at the start of this kind of revamped Bengals Beat podcast, tweet us. Feel free to reach out to us on social media and let us know if there's any questions you have. We'd love to make this an interactive podcast, and we appreciate you tuning in and look forward to getting you guys ready for the regular season, which is just right around the corner.